Hello and welcome to the End Evil podcast. This is Chris Jansen, and evil is the destruction of freedom. Thanks, folks, for joining me. Have a very exciting episode for you this week. This is an interview with a titan in this field of freedom, truth, and natural law. Today, I have to introduce to you Etienne de la Beauté Squared, author, speaker, activist. I first saw Etienne's work from his book, Government, the Biggest Scam in History, Exposed, and it does a great job of exposing just that. That's the kind of book everybody should have on their coffee table or somewhere where people can see right when they walk in their house. But Etienne is the founder of the Art of Liberty Foundation, Art of Liberty Daily News, and Five Mean Friday. He also does artofliberty.substack.com. And man, I've been loving watching Etienne's work. He's been part of multiple Freedom Under Natural Law conferences, and I got him right here. So why not just bring him in and quit talking about him and let him talk? Welcome, Etienne. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Hey, Chris. It's great to be with you and your audience.
Yeah, I'm not quite like I heard you met with Greg Carlwood. I love the Higher Side Chats, and I'm not like him. He does the best intros ever.
He does.
I'm not that guy. But I'll let you introduce yourself.
Well, I'll tell you. So, you know, this is my second time. I've got three podcasts today. I'm also doing Fair Food Forager in Australia in a little bit. But we had like some technical difficulty, but the first time I did, the Higher Side Chat, he like rolled into that introduction. I'm like, that's the best introduction anybody's ever given me. Like I couldn't, he's like, yeah, I put a lot of work into it. And he really does. He's really,
I've heard
great.
Multiple guests say that to him. You're the best intro I've ever had.
Yeah. So he's really proud of it too. I think he, you know, like he puts a lot of work into it, and it's just really, really good. But we just spent 2 hours talking about my new book, To See the Cages, To Leave It. And for folks in your audience that aren't familiar with me, you know, the basics are my thesis is that government has been the biggest scam in history. It's impossible to have a moral, legitimate government because it's impossible to delegate rights. You don't have yourself like the ability to make up rules for everybody or steal their money and redistribute it. If you don't have that right, you can't, you know, delegate a right. You don't have yourself to a representative or to a government to represent you doing something you don't have the ability to do yourself. You can't be bound by a social contract you didn't sign. You can't, you know, my beautiful fiance and myself, if there's two of us and one of Chris, we can't vote that you have to give us all your money. It doesn't matter if there's two of us, three of us, 300 million of us. You know, no magical additional person makes something immoral and illogical, now moral and logical. And so it's been the biggest scam in history. The subtitle of my first book was How Intergenerational Organized Crime Runs the Government, the Media, and Academia. And that really is the big secret. That's the big reveal. It's a government and a monopolized media system. And a monopolized mandatory education system. So you go to the mandatory government school, even if you went to a private school, the private school has to teach to the government's curriculum. And so they're controlling the information that society receives about the legitimacy, the necessity, and the desirability of having a government in the first place by controlling the information that they receive. My new book is To See the Cages, To Leave It, 25 Techniques, The Few, You Control the Many. And in the new book, I'm breaking down 25 techniques that they use, not just to get the population to go along, you know, obedient to government, but to get them to have fealty and adoration and I don't want to like, well, I'll just go ahead and give it away. It's a cult. It's a religion. They're selling the idea of having a government as a pseudo-religion. The religion's called statism. It's the idea of having a state, a government, in the first place. It's 100% indoctrinated. Nobody's born thinking, oh, we should, you know, give a small group of people rights that nobody else has and the ability to rob everybody and to make up rules for everybody. And that's what we should do. No, it has to be indoctrinated into you. And then I'm breaking down a lot of techniques that Hollywood is using, where they're making the government the hero and they're weaving the American flag, product placing it at moments of high positive emotion. They're weaving the flag into the burial ceremony of the military and the police so that people associate the memory of their beloved deceased with the American flag. They're paying sports teams. It used to be $53 million a year, to the NFL and the NHL and the NBA to do the flag worship ceremonies at halftime. They're weaving it into this in this year's Super Bowl, in the 2025 Super Bowl. Kendrick Lamar's backup dancers went red, white, and blue. And in a moment of high positive emotion, they all formed a flag. They all like got together and made an American flag, you know. And so they're in. And at the same time that Mustard, who was rapping with Kendrick Lamar, I don't know if you remember back to the Super Bowl, but it was Kendrick Lamar and Mustard. And Mustard's got oversized American flags on his jacket. And so they're using techniques. The NBA has the American flag on the backboard. So that you subconsciously associate the exhilaration of the goal with the flag. And so they're using a lot of unethically manipulative techniques that once you see it, like once you just flip through, you know, my book, because my book is full of visualizations and memes and like some of the videos that we're going to talk about. Like there's a, you know, you can scan a QR code. And if you didn't know it, like they're, when I say they're product placing the American flag into movies, I've got a short clip that you can scan the QR code in the book, or if you're in the EPUB version of To See the Cage, just to leave it, you can, you know, click on a screen pop, like a little 7-minute video. And in 7 minutes, they've just taken the couple of seconds that the American flag is on the screen in 12 Michael Bay movies. And there's 469 product placements of the flag in just 12 Michael Bay movies. And so this video is just going on and it's showing the flag or flags. It's going ding, 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 ding. And a counter is rolling as each one is counted. And then at the end of 7 minutes, you get to 469 and you're like, how did I never see that before? How did I not understand that that was going on? And so what I'm really trying to do is, you know, the magician can only really fool the audience until you understand how the magician does the trick. But then once you understand how the magician does the trick, you're nobody's fool. And so I'm pulling back the curtain and I'm showing people how the magician does the trick. And these tricks, they're unethical. And so it's the giveaway that the whole system is unethical, it's manipulative, it's artificial, it's being done to you. And then what I found is once people realize the government is like running game on them, is trying to chump them, that like once they get it, then the government, then they're out. Like I didn't understand you were trying to fool me, make me a fool, trick me into having, you know, an undeserved respect for you or an undeserved adoration for you. But now that I see that you're tricking me, well, I'm out. I'm not going to participate. I'm telling my friends. I'm telling my family. I'm giving away copies of the book. I'm making, we have a Liberator flash drive that we authorize and encourage people to make copies of. And so that's how we're firing up the revolution. We're giving, not only are we exposing it, but we're giving people tools to wake up their friends, their family, and their colleagues so that they're not being tax farmed, so they're not tax slaves. Difference between a slave, the difference between being a slave and being enslaved is, are you resisting? And so we make it easy to resist. And that is what we call the one-way revolution. It's only going in one direction. Like once you realize the government's running game on you, you know, most people are out, unless you're getting a paycheck for the government or unless you're in the military or something like that. But most people that aren't getting a paycheck from the government, when they find out the government is running these tricks on them, they're essentially done with the government.
And the scam, that's such a great word. I always refer to 2020 as the scamdemic. And you were someone who was speaking out about that right away and right on top of that. And I love how you explain things in a way that anybody can understand. Like, you're getting scammed. You're getting cheated. A lot of this manipulation is subtle. And we've experienced it from the time we were born. So we've never seen a world without this high level of mental manipulation and scams going on constantly. So it is kind of hard to awaken to for some folks. But I think one thing you do really well is you're good. You're really good with words and your grammar. We talk about the trivium and the funnel. I know you've been an awesome participant in the funnel. Maybe you could do for us is just, you know, some people talk about anarchism. We talk about that on my channel. And we also talk about, you know, statism, like you mentioned. Maybe you could explain to us what you mean by voluntarism. And, you know, I know you got a book coming up about the ism, too. And maybe you want to talk about that, too.
Sure. So the new book will be called Voluntarism, How the Only Ism, Fair for All, Leads to Harmony, Prosperity, and Good Karma for All. And what I mean by that is voluntarism is the idea that all relationships between human beings must be voluntary. Nobody has rights that other people don't. Nobody has an exception for morality, especially the government. It's a little bit like anarchy in the sense anarchy doesn't mean no rules. It means no rulers. I like to use the term voluntarism instead of anarchy for a number of reasons. Number one, because the rulers don't want the population to know that there is an option on the menu called no rulers. They have used this control of perception system, this media propaganda system, this monopoly media system, to change the meaning of the word anarchy from no rulers to chaos and dystopia. And in my book, Government, the Biggest Scam in History, which has been the best-selling at over 24 Liberty conferences and events, in that book I actually break down how they changed the definition of anarchy in the dictionary, and I show you the definition from the 1827 Webster's Dictionary, and then I compare and contrast that with the modern version from the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, and then I break down how the Safra banking family bought Encyclopedia Britannica and the dictionary, and they installed Leslie Gelb, the former president of the Council on Foreign Relations, on the editorial advisory board, and you can begin to see how they're able to change, you know, by buying up things like the dictionary, they're able to change the meaning of words. And Philip K. Dick famously said, if you can change the meaning of words, then if you can control the meaning of words, then you can control people that use the words. And so I use voluntarism, and I encourage others to use voluntarism because it also gives kind of a number one, you don't have to unpack all the baggage around the term anarchy, but it also gives you the opportunity to explain the benefits of a stateless society. Everybody would be wealthier, there'd be more harmony and prosperity in society. People wouldn't have to fight at the box, you know, for control of the local school board so that their kid doesn't learn critical race theory or LGBTQT studies or you know, Islam in Michigan, you know, like the craziness that goes on in the one size fits all mandatory government system. You'd be so wealthy, you'd be able to afford any kind of education that you wanted for kids. There'd be more economic activity. There'd be more job opportunities. People would be paid more. There would be so much more harmony and prosperity in society if we have this parasite government, you know, stealing the value out of the money, mandating, you know, monopolies in the economy that are inefficient. There wouldn't be all this economic misallocation. We wouldn't be wasting, you know, money, you know, blowing up empty valleys in Afghanistan or Iraq or whatever. You know, we wouldn't be paying $400,000 for an F-35 helmet. Just madness and insanity. And so everybody would be dramatically wealthier if there wasn't this organized crime system. The other thing I'm kind of known for is, you know, I don't use the word deep state. I don't use the word Illuminati. I don't use the word globalists or elitists. I find those to be unhelpful, undescriptive terms. This is organized crime. It's intergenerational organized crime using the technique of government to rob and control populations. And so you can best think of government as a technique to rob and control populations. And really the good news message of my work is we really need government. Everything government does, if you really think about it, most of what the government does is it provides services, whether that service is armed protective services that they call the police, or dispute resolution that they call the courts, or building the roads, or, you know, running the worst passenger train service, you know, in the civilized world, or, you know, air traffic control. Canada privatized air traffic control over a decade ago. Planes aren't falling out of the sky in Canada. And so everything the government does would be done better, faster, and cheaper. And then that would make everybody much wealthier, and then everybody would be more harmonious because you wouldn't have to fight at the ballot box. And then finally, the good karma piece is one of the nasty, ugly secret about government is if you are supporting government, if you are supporting Donald Trump or Kamala Harris or one politician or whatever, you're actually advocating violence on your fights at the Thanksgiving table. Is I don't want your ruler imposed on me, and you don't want your ruler, and I don't want your ruler imposed on me, and you don't want my ruler imposed on you. So we're going to fight tooth and nail at the Thanksgiving table. Well, in a voluntarist world, all of that goes away because you're not trying to, you know, rob your neighbor. You're not voting for violence. You're not advocating or be robbed to put these particular policies into practice. And that leads to good karma for everybody. Because I believe there's a negative karma in advocating for government, because if you're advocating that your neighbor get robbed and controlled, well, the karma for that is you have to live under that system, and now you get robbed and controlled. And this year you might like it, but next year you might not like the ruler that gets imposed on you. And so it's just better if we just left everything alone. And like I said, the good news message is we really don't need government. Everybody would be dramatically wealthier, and society would be more harmonious without it.
Well, one wonderful thing we have in my town where, you know, you work for years, you know, they supposedly you pay into the system, where the truth is it's really just being stolen because you never had the option to not pay. But we have this thing called public property, right? And so in our town, and probably yours too, you actually get fined for not parking right in the own town that you paid for your whole life working. And now they send pictures of you, you know, for maybe not stopping correctly at a corner. And you're supposed to pay this exponential rate, hundreds and hundreds of dollars more than most people even make, just for like not quite coming to a full stop. And then, they got picture evidence. Like, why would I pay someone to police me in that way with my own money? And that's the theory of what public property is, which would be downtown, all the parking places, all these enforcers of the so-called law would be owned by us who paid into the public in theory, right? And that's all, you know, stuff like that that's so obvious. You think people would see, you know, just totally getting fleeced with our own money that we worked hard for, and being treated like a criminal. And then, you know, you got this relationship with government. Like, if we saw that with a human being, you'd be like, oh, this is a violent, coercive relationship this person's taking from you. They're forcing you to do things you don't want to do. If we saw that happen to a person, we would be like, you're in a terrible relationship. You should never let someone treat you that way. But we're all allowing ourselves and all our family and our future generations for years and years to come to get run through this meal of basically stealing. And that's really what it amounts to, is different forms of stealing. Our co-friend Mark Passio does a really good job of explaining how evil is stealing. And all these forms of stealing have been endorsed, and one of them is government, which is also very similar to forms of religion. And it's these belief systems in our head that allow us to keep falling for these beliefs and to keep feeding into this system of this belief. And so I'm curious, what I know you have some great stuff in your books about this, but ways that governments are similar to each other with their, they're like religions. They have these symbols, they have these, like you said, the flag keeps showing up and everything, this propaganda. But you've pointed out a lot of awesome similarities between like religious and government and how it is a control of people's belief systems. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, so if you think of government as techniques for robbing and controlling population, there's a little bit of a playbook of how do you slay up a population, and you give them a flag, you put them into a mandatory government school, there's a, you know, there's a youth program, the Cub Scouts, you know, where you're going to get the kids where they're young, you're going to get them into the uniform, you're going to have them do the flag worship, you're going to give them awards, Cub Scout adventure loops, Boy Scout merit badges for literally regurgitating the doctrine of the state. Oh, good. You get a little reward for, okay, how do I be, citizenship in the country, citizenship in the world. And so you're going to give them a curriculum and then you're going to give them awards for doing it. And after you run this different playbook techniques on the population, if you want them to goose step, they'll goose step. And so what I do in the book, Government, the Biggest Scam in History, is actually compare the U.S., Nazi Germany, East Germany, and the former Soviet Union, because those are supposed to be the most evil countries in the world. I could have used North Korea. They're running the exact same playbook, but I break down in that book 20 techniques, and then I show what the technique looked like in Nazi Germany, in the United States, in the Soviet Union, in East Germany, and I put them right next to each other in the book. And by the time you flip through the first part of the book and you realize, hey, wait a minute, why is the United States running the exact same playbook as Nazi Germany? Why is the United States running literally the exact same playbook as the Soviet Union? Then you're, it's a lot of people have that aha moment. Now, I've literally had people, because the book is so visually powerful and it's not just a text-only book, and I'm using a lot of techniques to bring people to that moment of insight, that like, oh my God, this is Nazi. It's the same playbook as Nazism, but because I do it in this visually way, it's very, very powerful. And I've literally had people have changing experiences just flipping through the book as they got it. There's one guy just in particular, started rocking back and forth and grabbing his shirt. And he's like, this is dangerous. It was like just amazing, kind of success stories and being able to, wake people up to the reality of what's being done to them, the tax slavery, the control, the violent, you mentioned the violent, like, we'll charge you any amount of money that we want for having your blood alcohol be, 0.01% above what we say it could be, even if there was no accident involved, even if you didn't, hurt anybody, even if you didn't have to get in a wreck or whatever, we're just going to charge you $30,000. It's craziness. You talked about things and like the public property in 1984, they called it doublespeak. Okay, where the state had its own language, where logic didn't pertain, and it's not really public property. The public doesn't own it. The government owns it. It's not a public school. It's a government school. It's not public property. It's the government's property. And, if you think that you as a parent have any say to how your child be educated or the techniques that will be used to get, on them in the government school system, just try and go to the government school system and try and have them not run some of the unethically manipulative obedience techniques that they're using in the government school system to create obedient tax slaves. They're like some of the examples that I break down in both of the books are, nobody can leave without the government's permission. Nobody can go to the bathroom without the government's permission. You're going to walk in a single file line like you're in a prison. You're going to be subject to having your stuff searched at any time. So kids get accustomed to the government getting to search them, that we don't have a right to, you don't have any kind of right to privacy in the government school system. The government school system uses public shaming as obedience techniques. They use where you punish everybody for the actions of one, collective punishment, which is illegal under the Geneva Convention, but it's frequently used in the government school system. I actually wrote the book because my ex-wife had my kids in the government school system, and I was watching them run these techniques on my kids, and that, I got furious at it. I went to have lunch with my kids one day in the school cafeteria, and all of the tables have a little flip chart, you know, flip board on the table, and if one kid talks, they flip it to yellow. And if that kid talks again or somebody else talks at the table, then they flip it to red and then nobody can talk. If they talk above a certain, you know, decibel level or whatever, then they punish everybody at the table for the actions of one kid. And then I'm sitting there in that school cafeteria and I'm looking at the, I don't know if you remember, like they had it when I was a kid. I'd forgotten about it till I saw it with the kid, but they had the public shaming table where the bad kids will be publicly shamed being forced to eat. And I'm like, why is that kid at this table, like in the center of the room? It was like Orwellian. It was like in the center of the room where all the other kids, the tables were pointing there. And there's like this one pathetic looking kid, you know, there by himself. And he was at the, I forgot if they called it the quiet table or the, like, well, I forgot what the name of it was. But like the government schools are, and that you wouldn't know, like if you've never been to the school and you didn't have a background in kind of cult creation techniques like I do, you might not even understand that this is going on. The final one that they were used that I actually got, you know, some of the teachers not to use is I went to my kids' teachers and I'm like, I don't want you red, yellow, green trouble board on my kids. Okay, they're kind of public shaming. And so if you're not familiar with that, almost every American classroom management board or a red, yellow, green board or a red, yellow, all of the kids' names, and they will be like, it'll be like a sticker or it'll be like a pin with their name in it and everything. And if that kid talks, he goes from green to yellow, and then if he talks again, he goes to red. And so if you're – what they're doing is they're publicly – it's another, you know, form of, like, public shaming. And if, you know, we're going to take the kids that might, you know, that do something that we don't like, and we're going to hammer them down. We're going to publicly shame them. We're going to get them so they don't ever say anything out of turn. They don't ever talk out of turn. We're going to really make sure that in life they don't talk out of turn. Okay, that they're going to just be obedient and accepting of whatever we decide to do to them. And then, you know, really, if you take a look at most people in society, that's kind of what we got, right? We got, you know, like, you know, and the government's running other techniques too. So they'll take all the alpha males and then they'll fight them against another government's alpha males. And so they're going to kill off all the strong alpha males might resist them, and they're going to leave this like weak super beta males behind. And so like it's
and damaged, you know, people, right? All the people around, all the men that died in every one of these wars, you figure there's, you know, mothers, sisters, cousins, all traumatized, yeah, by the death and the loss of this entire portion of the generation that's super important that just gets kind of wiped out. I'm really glad you're bringing up the aspect of the children, because that is a big deal to me. During the scamdemic, I was particularly upset about what some of the things that were being imposed were doing to children, even my children who were in government school. And I had to make some big moves in my life to separate myself. I couldn't stop what was being done, but I could separate myself from it. But you reminded me, when I was in elementary school, halfway through first grade, I got put, my mom thought she was doing something great for me. Into what was called the GATE program, the Gifted and Talented Education for Children, where they tracked everything we were doing. They were keeping an eye on the intelligent kids. And we had this like government every morning where we would take turns being the president of the class and stuff like that. And they would keep charts on everything we did on all the walls where everyone could see. But I particularly remember going home one day because we would do the salute to the flag every morning, the whole class all together. And I remember going home one day and asking my mom and dad, hey, what does allegiance mean? You know, and they explained to me, and my dad loved the dictionary. He's like, let's get out the dictionary. We looked up allegiance. And I said, I don't think I really want my allegiance to a flag, you know? And they said, well, you don't have to, son. That's your choice. And so I never put my hand to my chest ever again. I never have all these years since I was a young kid. I made that decision. But I'm kind of curious for you, Etienne. I mean, you've been on this stuff longer than almost anyone I know. How did you come to first start realizing these things? You know, there's so much resistance for anyone to realize these things, even though they're so obvious once you realize them, like you said. But how did it creep up on you in your life? I'm really curious.
Well, I'm jealous because they had me hook, line, and sinker. I was a Cub Scout. I was a Boy Scout. I used to, you know, when on the days when you got to wear, I was excited to wear my Cub Scout or Boy Scout uniform to class because we didn't, if you were a Cub Scout or Boy Scout, you didn't put your hand over your heart. You got to salute the flag. And I can remember making a muscle. I can remember distinctly, I would make a muscle when I saluted the flag. I was like, they had me like hook, line, and sinker until somebody explained it to me. And so I like to say, I stand on the shoulder of giants. Mark Passio is one of those who explained a lot of the techniques that they use on the military and the police to get this obedience and to create order followers and to get people to murder. You know, to go abroad and murder people for the state and lies that are obviously based on, you know, wars obviously based on lies, obviously based on manufactured intelligence. And so, or to get, you know, people in the police to use violence on peaceful people for victimless crimes, things that aren't really crimes, which then makes the police the criminal and then compacts them into this unhealthy group. You know, they're going to pay the police over and above what they could make for comparable semi-skilled labor. They're going to give them golden pensions. They're going to lock them in for 20 years. They're going to, you know, get them into this group dynamic where they're all, you know, kind of dirty because they've all, you know, committed to use violence for the state to earn a paycheck. And then, you know, it's a very famous quote from Upton Sinclair. It's hard man to understand something when his salary ends upon his not understanding it. And so really the whole system has been set up ingeniously over the centuries by, you know, PhD level cultural anthropologists and futurists and psychologists, behavioral psychologists, you know, like it is, you know, in the book, I break down, you know, 25 techniques in to see ages to leave it. But in some of those techniques, like on the police and the military, you know, I put it into one technique in the book, but there's really dozens and dozens of techniques being used on the police and the military alone to get them to go along, you know, to manufacture an order follower, someone that will set their morality aside and do whatever they're told, even if it's evil, even if it's immoral. Even if it's using violence on their neighbors, you know, they're willing to do it for a paycheck. And then they've not only if they run all these unethically manipulative techniques on them to get them to do it, but then they've trapped them with that, you know, golden handcuffs of the, you know, golden pension and the, you know, the salary that they would not be able to get, you know, otherwise. Although everybody would be wealthier. Without a doubt, the police would be wealthier and the military would be wealthier if we could get rid of government. Everybody would be better off. But tax slave society where they're waging this economic warfare against us, where they're keeping the population artificially poor, where they're, you know, limiting the options that many people have in the economy. You know, for a lot of police officers, that's the best they're ever going to do.
Yeah. And I find, you know, in talking to people on a personal level, that is one of the more difficult aspects of this whole discussion that I get into. Folks, I think a lot of it has to do with some of the things you already described, you know, the flag showing up at all these sentimental moments in a person's life. You got the holidays around the flag, and then, you know, if someone's family member was in the military, they have this reverence for the fact that this person sacrificed, you know, especially if someone got injured or went overseas and came back, you know, troubled, even though we realize, you know, a lot of this trauma didn't ever need to happen in the first place, and it wasn't necessarily for a good goal. That didn't really help all of us, you know. But people are so emotional about it. How do we get through that, you know?
So yeah, they're brainwashing the troops. So the adrenaline, like a lot of the, I believe 100% that a lot of the door kicking in Iraq and Afghanistan and the convoys, you know, like they're running, you know, people through these convoys. They're probably planting the bombs because that adrenaline, it's incredibly destructive for the brain. So you're essentially like if you're under adrenaline, you know, 24/7 or for hours at a time, you're being brain damaged. The body's not attuned and set up to be under that level of adrenaline. And so what I think they're doing is they're taking again, you know, in some cases, the best and the brightest. They're tricking them into the armed forces. They're going to shoot them up full of brain damaging vaccines. They're like, I've got friends. There's one guy in particular, I won't say names, but like, he's not the same guy I knew. There's a couple of them. They're just not the same guy I knew in high school. And like, they're visibly dumber. I mean, they're visibly like almost like one guy in particular, I'm convinced has been reduced to like a retarded like IQ level just from like his Facebook. Like he looks like he's not the same guy. And I mean,
when you're in the military, you have to take whatever shots and pills they give you, right?
Right. So I think they're
testing things on them.
And I think part of the program, why they've got, you know, almost a 2 million man military, is that they want to run as many, they want to run as many people through the indoctrination and the propaganda of basic training as they can. But also they want to hurt, psychologically hurt, traumatize as many people as they can. And then I think that's part of the reason you see so many suicides in the military is also they don't understand what they're getting into. And then when they get into it, like there's a huge number of people.
Their heart knows deep down, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Their heart knows. But also, like in basic training, there's a huge try and commit suicide while they're in basic training. They're like, oh, my God, what have I gotten myself into? I can't get out of this. They're running. I have a friend of mine's son was the victim of a blanket party, and I don't know if you remember what a blanket party is from Full Metal Jacket, but like that's not
Gomer Pyle, right? Yeah.
No, they didn't do that to Gomer Pyle. Did they do that to Gomer Pyle?
Oh, I thought he was the Full Metal Jacket guy.
His name was Pyle. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I thought you were talking. Yeah, I was thinking
Pyle,
about the.
Yeah.
I'm dating
myself.
Yeah,
they all, you know, it's the same thing you were saying, like in school where one kid acts up and everybody's going to get hurt for it in the long run, then that one kid becomes the enemy of all the kids. And so that's encouraging bullying, encouraging the most heinous behavior you could expect from a group of young people to single out the most weakest among them or the most nonconformist to, you know, get them to do what the leadership or the authoritarians want them to do, right?
Right, and so this is an example of something for those that haven't seen the movie Full Metal Jacket or don't know what it is. In the movie Full Metal Jacket, there's a guy that's kind of non-conforming, he's not right, the drill sergeant, the time that guy makes a mistake, he's taking a donut from the mess hall. You know, the drill sergeant is making the entire our platoon do push-ups, and a blanket party and they'll make an improvised flail and it'll be a lock. It'll be like a, you can whip it around and then boom. And so then while you keep it night, they'll come and make sure that you're tucked under both covers and you can't do anything. And they'll hold you. Platoon will come by with either their sock or their towel, with their bar of soap or their lock, and they'll beat you. And so you're woken in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden, everybody in your platoon, you can't see who's doing it. All you're just being beaten, you know, with flails, with improvised flails. And that's not only is it tolerated, but it is encouraged and it's used as a technique. It goes on today. Like I said, this is, you know, I've got a friend, they did it to his son, and this was probably 6-7 years ago by now, you know, but I know that it's not just in Full Metal Jacket, because I got it, and he described to me how it was to him, like described to me how it was done to him in the military. And so, like, these are the kind of unethically manipulative. Now, if you're non-conforming in the way of, like, hey, this is unethical, and you're like explaining to the people in your training platoon or whatever, like, what's going on, then you're out. They'll kick you out. Like, we don't want that. We don't want you ruining it for us and explaining to everybody else the game that we're running on them. And so if you have any kind of intelligence and realize what's going on to you, they'll kick you right out, because they don't want you, you know, ruining the game they're running on all of the other recruits.
Yeah, I always think of Alice's restaurant and the Group W bench, you know, and you want to kill? Yeah, that's what they want. They want you to be in the mind state where you're to the point where you would kill, because you're not thinking with your holistic being. I think one of your books might have been where I read about the percentages of people that actually don't want to shoot other people in battle. I've heard that that is a lot higher than people think. Most of us don't really want to be part of evil. And what I'm seeing going on right now is very interesting. A lot of people are kind of really seeing, and this goes on again in waves, and I'm not one of those that says everything's changing, people are waking up, but I am noticing, because of the drastic ridiculousness of where things have gone in the government sphere and the lamestream media, that a lot more people are starting to go, what the hell is this crap? And the tendency then is to go to the left or go to the right, to go to the opposite of where they're at, where this is a crucial time in history. We have the opportunity to say, like you're saying, yeah, look at this stuff. Look how bad and stupid and crazy it is. And people are going out in groups and supposedly protesting, which, you know, in a lot of ways is just begging the government to do things differently or for another leader. But I'm curious what ideas. I know you have tons of ideas. I want people to go to theartofliberty.org. He's got so much wealth of information, links, and places to go and think on these topics. But let's talk a little bit about what can we do right now. People are starting to see through some of this BS to help lead them in the direction of truth and freedom, rather than going to another diversion of the left or the right or another pit of authoritarianism.
Well, you know, I hate to quote Alex Jones, because I think he's a controlled opposition voice that keeps people trapped in that fake left-right paradigm, but we really are an information war. Like, even that just kind of proves that even a blind squirrel can find a nut every now and then. But like, it's an information war. And so I look at my books a little like very, very sharp weapons. Like, how do you take some, so it's a cult indoctrination techniques. And so a lot of our friends, our family, our colleagues, our neighbors are victims of having these unethically manipulative techniques run on them. And so do you unpack that? How do you show them? And then, you know, so one of the things that I like to say is that once you see it, you can never unsee it. And so, I think, you know, my books are a good example of that. One of the other things that we do is we take everything on the book and we back it up on something that we call Liberator. And we take a lot of the information that is being censored on Facebook and on the social media platforms and on X and everything. And we make it not only uncensorable, but once you have a Liberator, you are authorized and encouraged to make copies for your friends. And so I like to say the difference between being a slave and being enslaved is, are you resisting? And so we make it easy to resist. We make it easy to wake up and cost effective to wake up, you know, your friends, your family, and your neighbors. Some of the things that you can do that don't cost any money and in fact can save you money is, my favorite thing is paying cash. And so, like, if you're paying in cash, you know, number one, you're giving the neighborhood merchants, especially the mom and pop stores, they make an extra, you know, 1.5% to 2.5% that would have gone to the organized crime bank in the background and fees. They're going to make that. They're going to be able to keep some of that money off the books. Okay, which is going to put more money in their pockets. Now maybe they can afford a guitar lesson for their kid, or they can afford, you know, something, you know, that would energize the local economy. That money is going to tend to stay in the economy. The community is going to be better prepared for a I'll be sitting on more cake because people, and so like, and it's going to make it harder to impose programmable digital money on the population, even though that's already kind of being imposed now. A health savings account is programmable digital money. An EBT card is programmable digital money. So like it's coming in slowly and surely. But one of the ways to fight that is to pay in cash. I just like to throw sand in the gears every time I can. So one of the things I do is, when I pay in cash, I'll give people the merchant cash, and like a lot of merchants are like, cash, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I like to give, and also I'll say, I like to give cash so you don't have to share it with the lying, stealing government. And they always laugh, and like, you know, and then sometimes it will be an interesting conversation or whatever. Like if everybody knew that everybody hated the government, as most people do, they just don't say anything. Just that little bit of sand in the gears is, you know, gives somebody else the courage to do the exact same thing. And if everybody did that, kind of like fall apart. I've been able to, out of the military, which I think is impressive. I was in a Gold's Gym in Dripping Springs, Texas, and I was in the sauna after my workout. These two 18-year-olds that were about to go into the military, and they're talking about, you know, like they were going in like within 2 or 3 weeks, they were going to sign on the dotted line and everything. And I was listening to them for a while, and then I just kind of laugh and I go, hey, you know, I just wanted to introduce myself. I'm an author. I'm a student of the system. I don't think you want to do that. I'd like to give you a free copy of my book. And I gave them, and like a week later, I ran into one of them in the gym, and we're not going to the military, man. Like, and, you know, like, so like, you know, you want to keep people out of the military. You want to keep the needles out of babies' arms. You know, there's like little, like all of these like things that you can do to, you know, to like, sometimes I'll tip in goldbacks, and if not fullbacks, it's like a, usually have one somewhere, but it's like flexible, spendable gold.
Yeah, and that, you know, just heading in that direction in all the details we can is, it's fulfilling, I find. Sometimes it's frustrating, but yeah. So that's a flexible gold back, you said, huh?
Yeah, so that's like flexible, spendable gold. And in different states, there's about 5 or 6 states where they're legal tender, and then merchants accept them as a
foreign currency.
Yeah, there's over 1,000 businesses in Utah that take it. I think there's 500 plus in New Hampshire. They just got Florida just introduced the law that makes them legal tender, so now they're making a big move in Florida. But like, if you can move some of your, you know, your dollars into gold. I've been taking these for years. I've been selling my book mostly at the Porcupine Freedom Festival, is where I get the most of them. But at Pork Fest, I took 400, over almost $500 in gold and fractional silver, you know, for my book. And then the value of that. So back then, when the first year I did it, it was like $3.50 each gold back $1 gold back, which is 1/1000th of an ounce of gold, was if you bought it, you could buy. There was gold, they had a, you know, stand there, and you could buy them for like $3.50. Then the next year it was like $4, and then it was $5.50, and now they're up to $8 because now gold's at 4,000 plus an ounce, and so now what I was getting, you know, what was $3.50 is now worth $8. And so, you know, like, so the, so if you're able to take some of your currency and convert it into an asset that is appreciating that you can still use in commerce, you can still buy things with it. You can still tip. You can, like, I'll offer, you know, waiters, I go, I can give you, you know, gold, or I can give you paper. What do you want? And they laugh and they're like, what are you talking about? And I'll show them. And
then you're educating them as well, right? That such a thing exists, right?
And all of them want the gold. And then the ones that take it, they've seen it, you know, double, you know, in value. And so you're in now, you, now your community is more, you know, more sturdy against
fortified.
Yeah, fortified against a dollar collapse or a dollar devaluation. And so these are just, you know, these are just some of the things.
Well, Etienne, you know, I do handyman work, and almost all my handyman work is usually a transaction between me and the person I'm working for. But I've found even within that, like, I know somebody who does a different trade, like plumbing or electrical, right? And I've gotten to know people I work for. And oftentimes I can trade with people. They have a skill that, that I have. And then, you know, we both have something the other person needs. So we just trade directly. And the more you look for these opportunities, the more you can make them happen. And the truth is, we don't, like you said, it's more profitable for all of us to cut out the middleman. Why is someone else out there fleecing you for your energy that they don't have any claim to in the first place? So, you know, every little personal practical thing people can do, I highly recommend. That being said, I do want to talk a little bit about, before we close up tonight, I know you got other shows to go to. This is also a spiritual war. And I think one of the things that really folds people in half when they look at this stuff, like let's say someone looks at your book and they finally realize, oh my gosh, you're right, you know, but they're still left often with like, oh, but there's nothing we can do. It's too far gone. We're too far down this road. If we tried to stop government now, it would be a complete mess and everybody would kill each other. There'd be gangs on the streets. If people really have trouble with this concept of a slow transition in that way, or how it could build steam. And so I think it's important to recognize at the end of the day, these things are really about principles, and they're about us being in the right spiritual place in our life and in our being. Even if we don't necessarily see the change right away, we still have to make the right choices and do the right things. And so I'd love to hear you talk. This is the End Evil podcast, so I had to bring it back to morality. And so I'd love to hear you bring in the morality and spirituality piece somewhat.
Sure. Well, we touched on it earlier where you're, you know, if you're advocating for government, you're advocating for, you're voting for violence, you're advocating that, you know, your friend, your neighbor, your colleague that disagrees with you have a ruler imposed on, you know, over you. But there's also the, you know, the spirit of you're supporting a system that has caused so much death and destruction in the world. If it wasn't for government, there would not be wars. There'd be nothing like the, you know, the kind of, you know, crazy wars. There wouldn't be eugenics. There wouldn't be vaccinated kids. There wouldn't be, you know, there's so much of the evil that goes on in the world is 100% directly attributable to the government, the policies of the government, and things like that. The suicides in the military, the you know, when people realize what they've gotten themselves into. And so we just must withdraw all of our, you know, support for it. The other thing that you mentioned was, you know, you know, some people are feel like they're trapped in the system, that they can't get out, and that's so they just end up going along with it. And I would encourage them to, you know, buck up, man. Like, you know, in the days of chattel slavery, there were two kinds of slaves. There were slaves, and then there were people that were enslaved. And in the movie 12 Years a Slave, there's a scene where they're on the riverboat. They've just been, you know, taken capture, and they're on a riverboat with a bunch of other people that have been slaves for years, and they're free men that were that were raised as free men and had the attitude of a free man, and so now they're enslaved among slaves, and they're talking about, you know, that there's only a couple of slavers on the boat, you know, maybe that they could, you know, like do it. And they one of the enslaved ones points that out, and he says something like, you know, these broke back slaves, they're not going to help us at all. You know, they're like, even though we outnumber them, you know, like 3 or 4 to 1, these people are enslaved, so they're not going to do anything because they're slaves. And so I would encourage to raise your children to not be slaves, but to, you know, and the different, like I said, the difference between being a slave and being enslaved is, are you fighting back? If you want to fight back, Art of Liberty Foundation can show you how to fight back. That's what we do. But you don't want to be broke back. The equivalent in chattel slavery is, you know, like, oh, I was a slave, my grandfather, my dad was a slave, his grandfather before them. And for every, you know, 100 of them, though, there's one free thinker, one person that is like, I'm not going along with this. And they're, you know, like Frederick Douglass is an example. Frederick Douglass is stealing the master's clothes off of those lines so he would have something to wear on his trip north. He's networking with other slaves to find out how the Underground Railroad works. He's saving a portion of his food so that he'll have something to eat on the journey north. And there's a reason why that these are considered heroes, is because it's so rare. But I would just encourage everyone within the sound of our voices to really think about, like, how do I want to raise my kids? Do I want to raise them to be slaves, or do I want to raise them to be enslaved in a world of slavery? Do I want to encourage them to fight back, or do I want them to, you know, encourage them to be broke back? Because it doesn't end well. Like, if we don't win this here, and I really believe that the United States is the last chance, you know, because we have his liberty, because we have the most powerful military, because this is where the information
we still have guns.
We're one of the really a small handful of populations that has not been disarmed. We have to win this here, and I think that we are. I'm very optimistic. But first, it's large scale cult deprogramming. They've been running classic textbook cult indoctrination techniques on the population. A lot of the population has bought it hook, line, and sinker. And so, you know, what I try and do with the books is, okay, how do you design a book, you know, to cut through in a very powerful way to get somebody to that moment of insight, even though it's painful, in a way that that once they see it, they can't unsee it. And yeah.
Want to motivate and inspire people to become activated and develop that will. What you're talking about is courage, right?
It's courage, but part of it's just knowledge. You know, like I said, yeah. they had me hook, line, and sinker until somebody explained it to me. And then once I understood it, I'm like, oh, I'm out. Oh man. Okay. You know, and I can be honest with they had me hook, line, and sinker. I made a muscle when I saluted the flag. Like, I almost joined the military. And out of high school, I went down and I took the Armed Forces Vocational Battery, whatever the test is, to figure out where ASVAB. I took the ASVAB with another friend of mine that wanted to go into the Marines. Neither one of us did it, but like, I was that close. I was that close because. Yeah. You know, they make it look so cool on the, you know, in the movies and everything like that. And it's only when you become older and wiser that you realize what's really going on. And so I'm just trying to, you know, I'm just trying to save as many kids from that meat grinder as I can. And the best way that I can do that is to show everybody how the magician pulls the trick. Because like I said, once you understand how the magician pulls the trick, you don't get fooled by the trick. And so that's what I'm trying to do with the book and the Art of Liberty Foundation. We're showing people how the magician pulls the tricks. So they don't get fooled by the trick.
Pull back the curtain and see what's really happening. And that, you know, for people, it starts off with some curiosity. And then at a certain point, honesty, being really honest with ourselves and saying, yeah, I know my feelings want to keep going this way. It's easier to keep going this way. But when I really looked at the situation objectively, ouch, you know, that's wrong. And so that's beautiful. I love all the work. You've been an inspiration for me along the way, and your work has given me a source of things to study and learn from. And so I really appreciate it. I hope everybody goes to artofliberty.org and checks out your books. And it's a way to help talk to others too. You've given people a lot of the grammar and vocabulary that they can use, so they don't have to start from scratch, you know, like you might have when you started all this. So yeah, I know we're reaching the end of an hour and you got a lot of other important stuff to get to. So anything else you want to cover, Etienne, the mic is yours.
No, I got to bounce. I've got a Zoom that started a minute ago, but the final thing I say is thank you for what you're doing. We're all in this together. We all must hang together, or we shall surely all hang separately. And so you're one of the thousand flowers that is blooming. And so thank you for what you do. And I look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks so much, Etienne. I hope everything goes smooth on your next show, and I appreciate your work, and much love. Evil's the destruction of freedom, folks. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
Peace out.
This is the End Evil Podcast, where we speak raw truth. The aim is to impress you about the value of your time on this planet, to shine a light on the most important truth that has been obscured for too long, to give you the information and knowledge necessary to make true change, to move human experience away from suffering and grief and towards love and joy. Let's begin to work towards the end of all evil. Every week, we dig into natural law, trauma programming, and the mechanisms of societal control. We replace ignorance with knowledge, fear with courage, and apathy with action. As Jeremy Locke said, evil is the destruction of freedom. Go to endevil.life